90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Yasmin, and I'll be your host for today. We would like to acknowledge that CKUT is located on unceded Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Abenaki, and Mohawk territories. The Ganyagahaga Nation is recognized as the custodians of the land and waters on which we air the show from today. Jajake, Montreal, is historically known as a gathering place for many First Nations. Today, it is home to a diverse population of Indigenous and other peoples. We respect the continued connections with the past, present, and future in our ongoing relationships with Indigenous and other peoples within the Montreal community. On today's show, we feature an interview with Corey Cardinal, an Indigenous prisoner at Saskatoon Correctional Center, and his friend Pablo, who is also incarcerated at Saskatoon Correctional Center. And he talks to us about the situation facing Indigenous prisoners in Saskatchewan. From his perspective, as someone from South America, Corey talks to us about the conditions in SCC, the Saskatoon Correctional Center, that led to the hunger strikes and the differences between jail in pandemic times and non-pandemic times. But first up, we have some announcements and news. On Tuesday, April 20th, Derek Chauvin, the white police officer who killed George Floyd, was found guilty of all charges. There were three charges against him, and he was found guilty on all three. And this is very unprecedented. This doesn't happen very often where a white police officer, or any police officer for that matter, is found guilty or held accountable in any way for the killing of people of color, in particular black men, black women, black trans women, black trans men. So that happened on Tuesday, and I think many people were wanting to celebrate or breathe a sigh of relief, but we have to remember when we're thinking about this that, yes, there's one person that's now going to be put in a cage to be held accountable for this, for the gruesome killing of George Floyd, which was completely unjust. But we have to think, is this going to propel us out of the oppressive system that we're in of mass incarceration based on racial capitalism? And is this going to change anything long term? I see that this could provide an opening for that, but it has to be a systemic change, and we need to abolish prisons. We need to find a new way forward, and there's a lot of work being done right now around the work of abolition. I would encourage those who may not be aware, there's a new book out by Miriam Kaba. It's called We Do This Till We Free Us. And it's abolitionist organizing and transforming justice. And there's definitely book clubs that have popped up in different cities and around places. So if you can and you're interested, you might want to look and see if there's a local book club that's focusing on reading this book. And if not, you might want to think about starting one. It goes through a lot of the questions folks have about abolition and how to do that hard work and how to get there. And there's so many different facets of it. But I would say one thing that was just brings us right back to the point of what we need to do is that at the same time that the verdict was, being announced in Minneapolis around for the guilty verdict of Derek Chauvin, Makia Bryant, a 16-year-old in Columbus, Ohio, a black 16-year-old, was killed by the police. So that, that just happened right at the same time. And so when you're thinking about when there's all this talk in the mainstream news about, oh, this is finally justice, we have to really think, is it? Because how is this going to affect the whole system? And so we need to think towards abolition and how we can change things long term. I'd like to include a few other also sad pieces of news around police brutality and police violence. So a 16-year-old Micronesian teen, IRA member, Skyup, was killed by Honolulu police, by the Honolulu Police Department on April 5th. His older brother, Jake, said it's hard to eat or sleep knowing that IRA member isn't coming home, but he's trying to be strong for his family. If you'd like to find out more information about this young Micronesian teenager in Hawaii that was killed by the police, you can go onto a website called civilbeat.org. And the next piece of news also comes to us from civilbeat.org. On April 15th, Lindani Mayeni, a 29-year-old unarmed South African black man, was shot dead by Honolulu police in Oahu. So that's another killing. These are all from April. And then, like I said, 16-year-old Makia Bryant was shot and killed by a Columbus police officer while responding to an attempted stabbing call. And those are some of the pieces of news I'd like to have shared. Another thing I would like to turn our listeners' attention to is a new book that's out. So Derrica Parnell, a social movement lawyer and activist, has a forthcoming book called Becoming Abolitionists. And it's an invitation to an imaginal world without police, following activists and authors' own journeys to embrace abolition. And so I can read a little bit more about this book. So it was published, well, it'll be coming out on October 5th, 2021, which happens to be my birthday, not 2021, but October 5th. That's nice. So here is a little blurb about the book, about Becoming Abolitionist by Derrica Parnell. Police cannot be reformed. Derrica Parnell invites us to question why we think we need the police in the first place. Imagine a world where the underlying structures that cause violence and harm are dismantled. For more than a century, activists in the United States have tried to reform the police. From community policing initiatives to increasing diversity, none of it has stopped the police from killing about 3 people a day. Millions of people continue to protest the violence. To protest police violence because these solutions do not match the problem. The police cannot be reformed. In Becoming Abolitionist, Parnell draws from her experiences as a lawyer, writer, and organizer, initially skeptical about police abolition. She saw too much sexual violence and buried too many friends to consider getting rid of police in her hometown of St. Louis, let alone the nation. The police were a placebo. Calling them felt like something. Something feels like everything when the other option seems like nothing. Parnell details how multiracial social movements rooted in rebellion, risk-taking, and revolutionary love pushed her and a generation of activists toward abolition. The book travels across geography and time and offers lessons that activists have learned from Ferguson to South Africa, from Reconstruction to contemporary protests against police shootings. Here, Parnell argues that police cannot be reformed and invites readers to envision new systems that work to address the root causes of violence. Becoming Abolitionist shows us that abolition is not about getting rid of police, but a commitment to create and support different answers to the problem of harm in society and most excitingly, an opportunity to reduce and eliminate harm in the first place. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM and www.ckut.ca. We're going to take a short musical break and we'll be back.
There's already so much pain, so much pain, so much pain. There's already so much pain, and there ain't nothing else we can do. Hey, she lied.
There's already so much pain, so much pain, so much pain. There's already so much pain, and there ain't nothing else we can do.
All right, listen up. They got tanks coming through right here, through right here, through right here. They got tanks coming through right here, and there ain't nothing else we can do.
All together,
they got tanks coming through right here, through right here, through right here. They got tanks coming through right here, and there ain't nothing else we can do but to fight.
And that was Chicago singer-songwriter Wyatt Waddell with Fight. And this was written in the summer of 2020. And there's a quote from Waddell about the song. It says, "This song is to me looking at what's happening and what I'd tell the people protesting. I hope that it can be an anthem for my people as they're fighting for a better America. There's already so much pain, and there ain't nothing else we can do." That's part of the lyric. So we're going to be going into our interview with Corey Cardinal, who is an Indigenous prisoner at Saskatoon Correction Center. Corey was very involved in the two hunger strikes that happened at Saskatoon Correctional this past winter. And in this interview, he talks to us about the conditions in SCC that led to the hunger strikes and the differences between jail and pandemic times and non-pandemic times. And just to give a little bit of context to our listeners, in Saskatchewan, Indigenous people account for 13.5% of the population. And the population's growing. However, they account for 65% of the total prison population federally, and that's twice as much as the national average of 30%. And if we look at the provincial jails in Saskatchewan, Indigenous people make up 75% of the population that is being held there and kept in prison there. And the government of Saskatchewan has said that this number has been consistent for the last 5 years. And those stats are coming to us from, I believe, 2017. So here's Corey Cardinal, an Indigenous prisoner at Saskatoon Correctional Center.
My name is Corey Cardinal. I'm an inmate of Saskatoon Correctional Center. the founder of Inmates for Humane Conditions, which is a group of inmates that are advocating for better conditions in provincial correctional centers. I've been advocating for inmates for quite a while now. You know, I've probably done 15 years in the correctional centers, multiple correctional centers. I've been to every unit, all the units. I have a lot of insight into the inner workings of the provincial system and how we're treated as not only just inmate as Aboriginal people, but just inmates as a whole. I've been incarcerated since August here this time around. I get out soon. I got sentenced to some time for property related offenses, tied to support my addiction. And I've been, incarcerated during, the COVID outbreak here in Saskatoon Correctional.
How can you tell us about how being incarcerated during COVID has been different than being incarcerated in other periods of time?
Oh, for sure. So the COVID-19 virus is, I think, known as the virus of truth. And it's why I say that is because it's brought out to the public the truth of how people react, how people, it's brought the truth to so many areas in society, you know, of what people's really agendas are, how they're treated, how they react to certain scenarios, that's, you know, with politicians and, more importantly, in Saskatoon Correctional, not just the correctional, but in Saskatchewan, as a whole. And in contrast, Saskatchewan is, predominantly conservative government, so protecting the economy, right? And it's Saskatchewan's been an anomaly for across Canada, right? Economy, right? There's always been tough on crime. As long as I can remember doing time, the correctionals are always filled, always with Aboriginal people, right? And it's always, ever since I've been doing time, it's always been the same overcrowding issues and predominant Aboriginal people here, right? So Saskatoon has 85% Aboriginal, right? So even on the unit I'm on right now, right, it's all a demographic of young, lost Aboriginal men right now. So I started advocating a long time ago. I started 2014, and the overcrowding was just getting really bad. I can remember a gym filled with inmates sleeping on floors on makeshift beds, having to ask to use the bathroom because there's no bathroom there. And so a long lineups and the guards telling them, you know, you can't use the bathroom right now, you know, because it interferes with movement, right? So the policies, right? That's where I initially started advocating and speaking out about issues in this specifically this jail, right? Because of the way people were treated. You know, you're right. You have no rights when you have to ask to use the urinate, right? And, you know, it resulted in inmates urinating in milk jugs and stuff in the corner of the gym because they were told that by the guard that they couldn't use the bathroom, right? They had to ask permission to use the bathroom, you know? It's been consistent. Up until the pandemic, it's always been overcrowded. So COVID-19 has exacerbated issues here, right? So in contrast to that, I was on this unit, and Fast food correctional is predominant dorms, right? So there's six dorms, bunk beds, shared bathrooms. And just prior to the pandemic, we were watched, like, all the inmates, we get a TV, and like, we call it the little COVID TV, right? And all the inmates are watching all the levels rise, and we're all standing, like, sitting around, like, looking, you know, like, we're just talking, like, yo, if COVID, you know, ever came to this unit, yo, we're sitting ducks, you know, because we're, like, you know, like, we've got shared bathrooms, you know, like, there's inmates sleeping on the floor here, this bunk bed, you know, like, there's common areas, come and go, right? So, for sure. So, I think that really exacerbated the pandemic. And that's when I started appealing to other advocates on behalf of the inmates. And I started, I reached out to what you call Sherry Meyer, Beyond Prison Walls, right? Wrote letters to the provincial government emphasizing vulnerabilities, factors, and it was met with ignorance. You know, no response. During the pandemic, there were serious outbreaks on each, you know, on each side of Saskatchewan. There was one in Alberta, Calgary Remand, serious outbreak. A lot of inmates got sick, so they started releasing people, right? The emergency releases. Taking proactive measures by that jurisdiction, and Headingley Correctional in Manitoba, also on the other side of Saskatchewan, another serious outbreak. And, you know, they took proactive measures to protect the inmates, emergency releases, right? Nonviolent offenders, people that are affected with these vulnerabilities, right? So Saskatchewan was really the only province that actually refused to do that for some odd reason, despite the many warnings. So there's examples of this on all sides of Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan actually is known for adopting the tough on crime and idealism from United States justice, right? And their policies and stuff, their tough on crime agenda, right? So, you know, the refusal to protect inmates just emphasizes the general attitude on how people are, how they treat people in the corrections. If they're releasing and they're protecting the inmates on all around them, then why wasn't Saskatchewan taking those proactive steps to protect a vulnerable demographic with serious vulnerabilities, even, you know? And we were writing letters to them, to the Minister of Corrections and Policing, the Coalition of Advocates, John Howard, Classic, Pro Bono. They're all writing these letters to the provincial, Christine Tell, you know, emphasizing the need to take these proactive measures to protect the inmates, and still a refusal. So it just goes to show the attitude that exists in Saskatchewan as a whole towards the inmates as a whole, you know, how we're treated, you know? And I truly believe that refusal to protect a demographic of vulnerable people and letting them get sick like that should be considered, knowing that the corrections are full with 85% Aboriginal people that have pre-existing health conditions, including the highest level of HIV coupled with Hep C as a co-infection, which is a pandemic within itself, which was also emphasized as a predominant factor, right? General knowledge. So that's a pandemic within a pandemic, right? So these vulnerable inmates, high levels of HIV, that's one virus, coupled with Hep C, that's two viruses, and, you know, COVID-19, that's three viruses running around. And these were all brought to the attention. Like, I emphasized these in two letters to the Minister of Corrections and Policing, and it was just met with ignorance, just a refusal to protect them. And I truly believe that's an act of genocide, meant to, you know, to eradicate.
After you wrote the letter to Minister Tell, in early January, you ended up going on a collective hunger strike with other people in the dorms in Saskatoon Correctional, but also with women incarcerated at Pine Grove Correctional, which, as far as I know, isn't even in the same town as the prison that you're in. And so I'm just curious if you could talk a bit about that experience of that hunger strike in early January. There were lots of support actions on the outside. It seemed like some people lasted almost 2 weeks on hunger strike. If you could just talk a bit about that huge wave of action in January.
Absolutely. I'm so impressed with those girls in Pine Grove. Even right now, they're on hunger strike for some other issues that I'll talk about. But back then, the first hunger strike was the way that we were being treated, in contrast to the public, the lack of willingness to protect us, give us masks. They were controlling the cleaning supplies. We couldn't even clean our unit, and we're on overcrowded conditions. I just had enough. Our unit was getting sick. There was guys bedridden. There was older guys that were sleeping on the floor. So I just had enough, you know. And all the inmates were just, they were ready to go off. They wanted to riot. And I just kind of mediated that. I said, yo, man, we can do this in a more respectful way, yo. You know, and like, we can do this in an honorable way, in a respectful way, you know. So it just, the communication broke down between the myself and the staff. They just refused to even listen to us, giving us general information. Oh, just social distance, wash your hands, and we're sitting in an overcrowded dorm. You know? Well, give us the cleaning supplies to clean. You know, you can have a cup of cleaner right now, you know, like shit like that. So that one, I said, yo, I'm on hunger strike, yo. I got into argument, and then all the inmates just surrounded the office. They're just like, yeah, we're on hunger strike too, and it just sparked like a movement, right? And I think the news, one of the inmates phoned the news and told them what happened, and all the other inmates in each dorm, each unit seen it on the news, and they're like, okay, well, there's a call. We're all on hunger strike, and boom, it just took off like wildfire. I went down to the hole for that. I was in the holding cells. I was on hunger strike there. The guards were constantly taunting me. They were trying to entice me into failure with junk food. They were bringing junk food. They were saying, you're hunger striking, even doing shit. You know, it's just constant staff aggression, right? Targeting. Very common scenario. So that was like the first one. And after that, public pressure for, you know, like, they started releasing more people with vulnerabilities, right? They started giving us cleaning supplies, because I think that one lasted for about a week, the first one, right? That was around the end of November, December, yeah. And then the second one was kind of a coordinated effort, right? So I got moved to another unit, another overcrowded unit, right? So all the inmates, right, they started unifying, right? They started, you know, realizing a lot of things. They started realizing a lot of things, how the system was failing them, how they didn't care about them, how they refused to protect them, and they wanted to take action, right? We started having these meetings. We started unifying, right? And Saskatoon, like, is home to over 20 gangs, right? So on that unit, it was just a true show of unification. All the multiple gang members put their shit aside. They dropped, like, they just put their fucking differences aside. And the whole fucking unit was, like, unified. We were all standing in a big circle, you know? And we were having these meetings. And it was very fucking, like, uplifting, you know, like, it was a true show of like fucking unification, and it was a really good, like, it felt fucking good. Anyways, we were having these discussions then on how we could protect ourselves and start doing our chores and, like, you know, and we started, like, sticking up for each other and protecting each other and eating together. And a few of my friends, like, we all had, we were concerned because we had family in other institutions, Pine Grove, and those groups. We were hearing these stories about how they're getting treated. We're not allowed to write or phone our family in other institutions, including Pine Grove. So we were phoning these our family in Pine Grove through third-party phone calls. We were merging our calls through phone conferencing, timing it. And we were hearing stories about how they're getting treated. And Pine Grove is, we haven't ever heard anything about them. They're never in the media. They're never, we never hear anything. Not like Saskatoon. It's always in the media because they're exploited because of the way they, you know, like, because of systemic shit, right? So we never hear anything about Pine Grove. And it, our worst fears were realized that how they were getting treated in there, right? How the guards were systemic racism, right? Suppressing their complaints. They weren't even allowed the newspaper, right? They were even getting threatened to turn the TV off when they're watching the news, right? So they're suppressing those criminals in there. So we started organizing. We had these, you know, we really felt nobody had confidence in what, how we, the Minister of Corrections and Policing, Christine Tell, handled the pandemic, right? Refusing to protect us. So we organized another hunger strike, and all the other units were phoning Sherry. She was our line of communication. They were all phoning her, and from this unit, this unit I'm on, they were phoning her, and multiple units, right? So I put the word out there. Okay, so this is what we're going to do. January 6th, she comes back to work, right after the Christmas holiday. We're going to have a hunger strike waiting for her. We're going to call. We're going to lay out the reasons why we think that she should step down. Because of how she was handling the pandemic. And we got the word to Pine Grove, and right away they were on it, right? Boom, they're just like, yeah, okay. So we coordinated that. That's what, and then we were all writing letters. Like, I encourage all the inmates to write letters about how they're treated. And on January 6th, we're going to release all those letters one by one throughout the day to an online protest also. An email on a mass CC list to all the multiple advocates. I think she had over 70 people on that CC list, including politicians, right? Just to create a public awareness, to promote a public awareness, right? Because they were in the media, the Minister of Corrections and Policing, Public Relations, was releasing these false statements saying that we had adequate health care, everything's all good, and, you know, like this and that, and just lying to the public. So we wanted to create awareness of how we were really treated. And we felt the public had the right to know the how we were treated. So that, along with that online protest, we aligned it with a hunger strike. And everybody had their own reasons too, right? So come January 6th, we, at 12 o'clock, all the inmates just, they refused to eat. Also, we had another alliance, myself, our group, Inmates for Humane Conditions, Beyond Prison Walls, and Freelance Free People formed an alliance. And we had like a conference call on how they could support us. And they offered their help, and we brainstormed on how we could do this. And we came up with the idea, you know, like, of a day of action for the public, right? And so they wrote a letter, also a petition, right? And at the same time, I was doing writing for a magazine there, Briar Patch. I wrote, I felt compelled to put into context past colonial policies and how they've been treating us since Confederation, just as Aboriginal people as a whole, right? Since this campaign, this campaign to diminish our identities as just not only inmates but Aboriginal people, right? Just calling us thieves, calling us criminals, you know. So you know, there's just been a campaign since Confederation to suppress Aboriginal men. The spotlight has been on Aboriginal men, Aboriginal people, you know, calling us this and that, you know, and trying to suppress and try to diminish our humanity to the public, right? So the letter that I wrote, a lot of pain came out in that letter. It wrote itself. You know, it just felt like somebody was just writing from inside me. It was already written in my heart. It was written in my soul. It just came out. And I wrote that in segregation, right? Like on the floor, right? Because we have no desks in secure. We get very minimal shit. We don't even get a regular pencil. They give us like a rubber fucking pencil. So inmates don't fucking stab each other, right? So they have to like this. That's what I wrote it with, on the floor in my cell with a rubber pencil. And it just, you know, like all the pain just amplified. And I put it all into that letter, you know, and it's put into context past colonial dominant structures that's just been suppressing people. And I really felt like the public should know that in these correctionals, there's not a community of, not a bunch of criminals and thieves that just want to get out, steal, and this and that, right? There's young, bright, intelligent minds here, that a community of strong-willed brothers that protect each other, you know, that teach each other, that are talented, and, you know, like they draw, and you know, they teach each other how to bead and this and that, you know, and they help each other, right? And I really felt compelled to bring that out in that letter, so that I sent that letter to the Freelance Free People, and they got it published with Briar Patch, right? So that was attached to it circulated a lot, and it generated a lot of support, right? And I think it opened up the public's eyes. It put into context so much issues, so much pain, and it created a movement, one piece of writing, you know, that I put into context. It showed that our movement was to promote humanity. So it was a public campaign to promote our humanity. And I think the public picked up on that. And those girls, I'm so proud of them, man. You know, even though, you know, like a small number of them, but still, in Pine Grove itself, you know, it just showed the unification, the solidarity between all the institutions that took part. It showed a true sign of unification. It showed character. It showed humanity. You know, it showed that people are in these correctionals are capable of taking this movement. And that's what it is. It's a movement to promote humanity. You know? And I think one of those girls stood on hunger strike for like 18 days, Cherise, Tracia Sutherland. She was on hunger strike for like 18 days. I'm reading, I'm in segregation, right? Like, reading the paper, like our hunger strike was already cut, right? Like, we lasted, I think, a week. So started eating, and like, I was like, and then all of a sudden, in the paper, the newspaper, I see this article about this girl in Pine Grove. I was like, are you serious? Yo, she's still going? Like, you know, like it just showed that Aboriginal fighting spirit that came out, you know? That spirit, you know, that just came out, and it showed in this movement, you know, like within each institution, you know? And I think it really spoke a lot. It really made an impression. So that and the public, I think they had I don't know how many were involved, like, that in solidarity. Like, I'm still hearing about it. Like, I just hear bits and pieces. I was in segregation. I didn't have access to the internet or, you know, like, newspaper and but I think a lot of people took part in that day of action. And, you know, it just shows that people out there actually do care, that do support humanity, you know, and support inmates. I was really proud for that. You know, I was really proud for my Aboriginal people here. And I think it was a really awesome show, you know, like it was uplifting. You know, and those girls in there over there, there's still a lot of issues going on over there in Pine Grove because they're so isolated, you know, and they get away with so much and it's just starting to come out. And it's like a Pandora's box of issues that, you know, like that got opened with those girls. And I'm so proud of that Charisse Sutherland, that, what you call, that stood on hunger strike, because she represented all those girls. She opened that issue up. And people start paying attention to what's going on in there. So even right now, they're on hunger strike. I think their complaints are getting suppressed. So it's constant suppression, right? Trying to hide from the public, right? And they don't want it to get out. So they're isolation, right? Suppression. And they're standing up for themselves now. People are standing up for themselves in jail. And they're doing it in a respectful way. We're organizing other things. You know, there's more people involved. You know, because there's an old structure that used to exist, you know, that we used to live by, you know, and we used to protect our vulnerable people, you know. It doesn't matter if they're in jail. People are still vulnerable, you know. We're still vulnerable. I'm still vulnerable, you know. And those girls need to know that they're worth protecting, that they're worth so much more than what the government says they should have.
You're listening to The Prison Radio Show at CKUT.ca or 90.3 FM. If you're just tuning in, we were listening to an interview with Corey Cardinal, who's an Indigenous prisoner at Saskatoon Correctional Center. Corey was very involved in the two hunger strikes that happened in Saskatoon this past winter, and he talked to us about the conditions in Saskatoon Correctional Center that led to the hunger strikes, and he also illuminated for us some of the differences between jail and pandemic and non-pandemic times. We are going to take a short musical break, and then we will be back with an interview where Corey introduces us to his friend Pablo, who is also incarcerated at the Saskatoon Correctional Center, and he talks to us about the situation facing Indigenous prisoners. So we'll be right back. Keep it locked.
He's no racist, he says, but he just doesn't understand why Native Americans are all in it.
Tizzy,
he says. He thinks protests over mascots are, in a word, ridiculous. Why?
Utterly ridiculous. Protesting in this country is not over the Native Americans.
People protest
over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, one thing, like I said, I'm not a
racist.
I just feel like it's getting ridiculous. I mean, it's 500 years since Columbus came in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we learn by our mistakes? Let it go. It's everybody live together. Why, you know, to me, it's ridiculous.
What's going on in the world today?
Can't get mad.
Look, I
time machine must have been invented, cause it feels like we're back in a time where all the shit was accepted. Or maybe it was past generations that passed it down to the next kid. So can I really blame the kids?
Nope.
Or is it the parents?
Hmm.
Yeah. That taught them they're not the same color of skin. You walk in, they go judge their appearance.
Woo. My mom would be embarrassed, man. Yeah. If I was that guy.
True. Supremacy lies over bats and eyes. Standing rock, police arriving, everybody lose their mind. Man, it's fucked up, but we rock solid and look shook. Ooh. And we good like Mama Mo's cookbook.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't be stuck up in a miller, cause there ain't no such thing as halfway crooks.
Nah.
Three K's in America. And KK Canada. That's Trump and Trudeau when them true colors show. I'm just clearing the smoke in the air.
Yeah.
That ain't nothing new though.
Nope.
Isn't that true though?
True.
If I rock a Caucasian tea, you would feel a little bit of that, right? Thought so.
Hmm.
Are we the land of the free? Or the land of the imprisoned, low key? I guess it comes down to your POV. Let's just agree to disagree. That all lives matter. All lives matter. Yeah. Until we cut out all the bullshit, there'll always be 3Ks in Cook and Canada.
I see you on the street.
KK Canada.
I see you with the police.
KK Canada.
Give her up.
What you gonna do?
We gon' make it count.
Damn right.
2017 and you call them blacks.
Don't do it. What you call them?
What's that about?
I don't know.
I stand with my sisters, I'll stand with my brothers.
Yeah.
No doubt. This racial cleanse just brought up a number.
Power to the people.
Never count us out. My brothers and sisters, this the resistance. Our energy's fearless. They fearing our spirits, our enemy spirits. Feel we inferior. How can like a melamine make them superior?
The building was built on bodies enslaved. Your freedom provided by people in chains. Leave it in the past, but I'm hearing them say, our country's the greatest.
No way.
Mask off. Show your face, bitch. The KKK turned the closet racist. Filled with hatred is an understatement. That's the rise of the brain dead from mama's base.
Yeah. You were taught to hate. You can learn to love. Like the Chronicles of OJ, I see your true colors.
Yeah.
Blacks doing thug shit. Nate's doing chuck shit. You're saying not a picket, but the glove fit.
Just right.
Now I'm sick and tired of these fucking tyrants. When it hits the fan, who stands beside us? We can't be silent. You'll never divide us. No blood in the soil of the land we provide.
No love lost.
No.
Tell me what you've been through.
No one
knows. You try to kill us off. What's your excuse?
What?
Black lives matter. If you don't understand it, keep quiet, bitch.
Look at the pattern. Equality's lost. Check, please. Don't patronize me, we need equity.
Rest in power, Miss Heather, how are we fired up?
The name is Canada.
I see you on the street.
KK Canada.
I see you with the police.
KK Canada.
I see you on my news feed.
KK Canada.
I see you on the club scene.
Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton do not deserve to be called civil rights leaders. They are not. They are hustlers and pimps who make a living off inflaming racial tensions.
You're listening to The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. That was Snotty Nose Rez Kids with two tracks. The first was I'm No Racist, But... That's a skit. And then that was followed by KKK Canada, off of their 2017 album entitled The Average Savage. So Snotty Nose Red Kids is a Canadian hip-hop duo of Haisla Indigenous descent from Kitimat, BC, composed of rappers Young Tribes and Young D, formed in 2016, and that was in September 2017. The letter went on to secure the Best Hip-Hop Artist at the Western Canadian Music Awards, cemented them on 2018's Top 10 list, and coveted the Polaris Music Prize and landed them a 2019 Juno for Best Indigenous Music Album. I'm going to introduce this next piece is a piece where Corey, who we were hearing from earlier, who is in prison at the Saskatoon Correctional Center, introduces us to his friend Pablo. Pablo is also incarcerated at the Saskatoon Correctional Center, and he talks to us about the situation facing Indigenous prisoners in Saskatchewan from his perspective as someone from South America. Pablo has spent time in the prison system in Ontario and in both provincial and federal prisons, but says that the situation in Saskatchewan is particularly bad compared to other prisons he has been in.
My name's Corey Cardinal here, and we're on the overcrowded unit here that was deeply affected by COVID. And a lot of inmates here feel that, the way that things have been handled and long-stemming systemic issues. And my friend here, he's an inmate. His name is Pablo. He's been doing time with me for quite a long time. Years. He has a lot of insight into the correctional system. He's been the inmate rep on multiple units representing inmates, issues and stuff. He has a lot of insight into how systemic racism, policies that suppress inmates and stuff here. So I'm going to put him on here when he wants to speak. So his name is Pablo.
I'm from Ontario, and I did time in Kingston, I did time in Joshville, and I did time in Norwood, and I did time in Beaver Creek, in bad institution, in Kingston City, in Ontario. And recently I came here, and I've been doing time here in Saskatchewan right now, and I see the system is totally different than Ontario. The discrimination that's going on here in Saskatchewan to the Native community, it's very, very, very hurting. The way how the system just put everything on there. People that can't use from the reserves and things like that coming to the city that would not know what's going on up here. And they, for little mistakes they have, or like I said, incidents and with the law, they get a lot of time. The way that I see is they want to put the people, the inmates, the native, they just want to put it behind bars so they cannot gain, they cannot do things they want to do, and instead to be educated. It's not fair. It's not fair for them. You know, they've been incarcerated for 9 months, 14 months, 16 months with not basically a fundamental support, like, you know. So that being said, the way that I see is they just want to just keep silence, the native people. Putting in jail so they can everybody they can think they're bad people, they're not deserve to do this, they're not deserve to do that, and that was wrong. They're very beautiful people, and I learned to live with them, and really they're good, my friends, and it's not fair. That's the way that I think. And now here it is in the Saskatoon Correctional Center is how can I say? According to I come from South America, so the institutions here in Canada, they're totally different, they're back home. So basically, I would say it's a club med compared to our countries, you know. And there's so many things that have to be addressed, you know. I know that we cannot fix the war in one day, but at least we can start building something, you know. So maybe it would take work and effort and set up a goal within 1 to 5 years, you know, what we want to achieve in order to change that. Because we got to change that. We got to take all the young people that come. They come to the city, you know. They have to come to success. We don't need them to come here for failure. So we need to stop that. Canada is a country that we got 127 different cultures here in Canada. Canada is the country that have brought people all around the world, and I don't understand why. I couldn't understand. I never see this in Ontario. I never see this discrimination as I see here in Saskatchewan, especially in Saskatchewan. Because the way that I see it is when I was a child and I was living back in my country, it's similar like that. Discrimination is bad, you know. You get people that you're rich, you're poor, or you get educated, you're not educated, and they go by last names, and if you're important or not important. You know, those times are over. Those times are over. We all in this world are human, and we are to live as a society and to help each other. We're forgetting about the color of the skin. just to remember we got the same color inside. We got the same bones, the same blood. We got everything the same color inside our bodies. The only thing that changes is the outside, the appearance of every human being. Okay? It's the way how our brain develops and go on. So that being said, I don't know why they're doing that. Hey, it can be maybe most of the time things happen is because they're lucrative, beneficial, and money-wise, you know, and I wish we can have support. Like, I mean, Native people have support from different other superpower countries. They will say, okay, if you want to do this, what about if we get China involved, we get Russian involved, and they will say we're going to sell our mineral rights to them instead to Canada. So what would you do then, Canada? Why would you do that or things like that? We have different countries that want to release, support us in our ways. So they have to be changed. It has to be changed, and it's a good way that maybe right now, and maybe, I don't know, this is the first time that I hear this, these things happening with the radio and through the inmates, but it has to be something more powerful with it nationally, have a radio nationally everywhere so that they're aware what really is going on with the community. So they might just say whatever the news say or they say, they have to know where exactly they're coming from and why people are the way they are and why they have to be where they are right now. Because we are humans, we all got hearts, we all got families, and we have done something, you know, and then we pay for what we have that we do. But if we would have a little bit of education and understanding, and, you know, before we did this crimes, especially the crimes that we have done here, they're not crimes that you compare to the other crimes that are around Canada, the sentences, and it's very, very, very heavy in compared to other provinces. That is said, so something is going on, something is behind this that we don't know yet. I don't know what it is. You know, so they're trying to change the view, and it's not easy road. It's a hard road, but I know that we can do it. And the thing is to start. The hardest part in life to do something is to start something. But when you start something, it's half of the job done. Now you have to just keep going.
And that was an interview with Pablo, who was incarcerated at the Saskatoon Correctional Center. He spoke with us about the situation facing Indigenous prisoners in Saskatchewan as someone from South America and let us know that as someone who has spent time in the prison system in Ontario, in both provincial and federal prisons, really underscores that the situation in Saskatchewan is particularly bad compared to the other prisons that he has been in. You've been listening to The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, May 13th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions about anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, please feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. I'd like to give a shout out to NorDegree, who helped us compile some of our news items, and to our collective members for conducting the interviews, and to Corey and Pablo for devoting their time, and to Spencer from CKUT for helping us get this on the air while we're remote. Thanks again and stay tuned. Thank you.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing you a wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked to CKT 90.3 FM. Let us say